Okay. Today is Sunday, February 13th, 2022, and after a week of rain, we seem to have very, very nice weather. Coming back to what we've spoken about, the Haftorah. Remember the Kriyat HaTorah and the Haftorah and reading, and what do you read it from? I can't get over the world beyond me, the Hasidic world. I can't get over how Zalzel and the Haftorah. And my Talmud of many decades, Steve Gross, writes to me that in all of the about 10 Hasidic Shtiblach Davening, the Megillot were never read out loud b'tzibur on Yantif. In other words, Kohelet or Shir HaShirim, all they did was give a bang and say Kohelet, Shir HaShirim, and every people read it quietly, quickly, or they were told to read it when they go home, but they didn't do it in shul, didn't hold up the davening. Alright, these are the Megillah, the Haftorah again. We've now heard Eidit Nemana, that in Shtiblach, some Shtiblach, everyone reads it together. I never saw that, but in my shul, I can tell you this past Shabbat, the Baal Korei happens to be a graduate of this Kollel. He's a fabulous Baal Korei, Dovi Fisher. He read the Haftorah from the scroll. Regarding the advertisement I mentioned, and I made copies, if anyone wants, people have asked me for copies. It seems anyone who learned in Philadelphia, this is an invaluable document. It's from Reb Shmuel Kamenetsky, got engaged, and it has to be about 72 years ago. So I would put this document at 49 or 50, it doesn't have a date. And it's wishing him mazel tov, and it's signed on by many of the top Talmidim in Lakewood at that time. And among the signatures is Shlomo Kalbach. So that shows you Shlomo was part of the crowd, and everything I said about him was correct. And it's famous here, Yitzchak Dershowitz. Now, I heard from Yitzchak Dershowitz's, if I have it right, it's his nephew who corrected me. They're two Yitzchak Dershowitzes, they're their first cousins, evidently. And the Yitzchak Dershowitz who writes me is Cheskel, his father, the Yitzchak Dershowitz in the Yed for Reb Shmuel was my great uncle Yitzchak, who was a Talmud in the 40s. He subsequently moved to Eretz Yisrael right after the founding of the state. How he got there is an interesting story. Gershon Kranzler writes about it in his book, Williamsburg Memories. I guess it's maybe the volume I'm quoting in class. He stowed away on a boat. And Reb Aaron had to call my great-grandmother and let her know her son was on the way to Eretz Yisrael. He learned in Hebron, settled in Bnei Brak, has hundreds of descendants. And I remember Sam Dershowitz used to tell me about him. My father, Yitzchak, that's the one I refer to as the author of the book on Reb Aaron, also learned in Lakewood in the last period of Reb Aaron's life. So that was a little later than his great uncle. So I just want to make that correction. Then I want to show you an amazing what surfaces is unbelievable. Elliot, you think a Kiddush club is a recent invention? Go back 900 years already, and they were fighting the Kiddush Club. And I thank my dear Talmud, Dr. Vic Gvirtz, William Gvirtz. He came up with the Sefer, sent me a link, Sefer Yosef Ometz. It's by, it was Yosef Yuspa Han, it's Haina. You know, this may be related to Kenny Hain. They're all Yekkers. And Nurigligin, if I'm pronouncing the last name correct. He was head of the Dayanim in Kehila Kadosha, Frankfurt, and in his Sefer, and we're talking, if I'm not mistaken, he's a Talmud of the Tumat Hadeshin. One second, I think. I have to read the introduction. It gives his life story as well. And he was a Talmud of the Tumat Hadeshin. And in the Sefer, page 139, you can't believe your eyes. He's writing about what went on there. The Menhagim, 139, 140. And he writes that they shouldn't sell wine to the youngsters on Friday. Why? Before the Haftorah, they all disappear, and they come back. He writes that they disappear, and if they do come back, they're not entirely stable. They're a little bit high, and some of them, yesh habei kilkulim, it's whiskey, yain saraf, not just wine, I should say. Gorem lebitul tefilat musaf be'asara. And he says, they're drunk, they don't daven musaf. And some of the bachurim shotim atzeim shikurim, v'shokachim me'lepechel musaf. And they simply forget about davening musaf. So here you see a kiddush club drinking before musaf hundreds and hundreds of years ago. So all we can say is, how's the French expression go? As much as time passes, nothing changes. In rabbinic Hebrew, I'd say, Satna v'yarechatu. The world, we're progressives today, retrogressives, but the person remains the same. This is in relation to our Monday class. I have to thank David Newman. He can research any topic. We spoke about the Hasidic women, the Satma crowd. So what they have is a little, let me see what the word is. It's a spitzel, it's called. A drop of hair, and the tichel goes on top of it, and it looks like they have hair underneath the tichel, but really their head is shaven. It's a spitzel in front with a tichel on top. All right, all I can say is, we Litvakin don't live that way, and the Pelish Chassidim don't live that way either, but we have to give credit. This is the way the Satma live. What did you want to say, Vic? You have a quixotic look on your face, but I can only tell you that Talmud of mine, there was a book came out in America. I read about it. I figured I'm never going to get it here. You would know how to order it and do it. So a Talmud of mine, Beryl Phillips, whom I thank immensely, got the book for me and had Amazon send it on to me. It's a memoir of someone who grew up in the East Side. He's an anthropologist, Jonathan Boyarin.
Oh, yeah.
And he spent a year, took off a year in just learning MTJ. And it's a fabulous, insightful description. He writes very nicely, I mean. And you really feel part of that little base medicine of David Feinstein, but he makes one interesting point about the crowd around Reb David. They didn't like the new Hasidic Chumras. It's probably the only Litvisha yeshiva outside of YU where they have OUD cookies. And they you know, they have some Chassidim who drop in to learn there. So they put up a little sign, these cookies are not Chol of Yisrael, they are OUD. But they have the OUD. They don't take on any chumras that the Hasidic world has instituted. So it's a very, very little fascinating volume. And Rav David Feinstein is really something very, very special. I don't know, I actually knew him, had the privilege of knowing him. I didn't know him intimately, but I knew him. I knew Rav Moshe, of course. I knew Rav Reuven. I know Rav Reuven. And Rav David Feinstein is very special. Posek, Mufak, Atamak Hachem. And you got to realize, he came to America already. He was a teenager. He came in 1937. Where did he learn? Everything he learned is with his father. There, what do you think? There was yeshiva in Europe? There was, you know what was there, communism. And he learned with his father and came to London. Okay, now, let's pick up where we left off. And as I said, I'm going to introduce you to an amazing source today. We're dealing with the Mishnah Halacha, Chelek Tetzayin, Tshuva Samech Chet. And here, Rabbi Menashe Klein is asked again in the year 2000 about these people demanding they get certification. And as I told you last week, very fascinatingly, it maybe has to be checked by a computer, but in my humble opinion, this is the first time the word Shnura has entered officially into responsa literature. And he's hysterical. Rav Asher Klein says, how much do you want to embarrass these people? They're schnurres. You have to delegate them schnurres. You have to delegate if they're a half schnurre, a third schnurre, a quarter schnurre. How much money do they need? And then you waste their time. And, you know, in any bureaucracy, even Gruss, I have a little, I'm trying to get a new file cabinet. Vic, it'll have a plaque in honor of Vic Snow. And you can't believe there are bureaucracy. I was just upstairs giving one of the secretaries, I said, you let the big boss know I need it desperately. I can't get out all my notes. You need room to move back and forth. And bureaucracy is bureaucracy. So he says the person will come to meet the rabbi or to meet the committee. The committee's not in. The rabbi's not in. Then he has to take a picture. I take a picture today, maybe a little bit easier than years ago when you have to go to a photographer. He has to take a picture. What are you doing to the poor guy? And we ended off last week's class, you know, the example of Rivka, how Hagmila Chesed to Eliezer was overwhelming. And she sort of said to him, I'm a little girl, I'm 3 years old, you're here, 10 people with your donkeys, let them get the water. And instead she ran and did, and he compared it with Ephraim Hachiti. And Ephraim Hachiti, you understand, Ovela Socher, it's Beni Ubein Cha Mahu. And in the meantime, he fleeced them and took the highest price possible. And all right, this is a beautiful point, and we have to go out of our way to be decent, to be nice, and not to upset poor people. Okay, we saw all the sources. It doesn't mean that every poor person is honest. It doesn't mean that they're not scams. This is part of life. Unfortunately, I grew up, I was always very idealistic. It took me a long time to learn that not everyone is so idealistic and not everyone is a tzaddik. And you can, you know, be klapei chutz, ashamed of Torah mitzvah, and klapei pnim, you're no better than some people in the headlines. And this is part of life. So there are phonies among us. But nevertheless, I showed you the Gemara, we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu that they're phonies, because that protects us. Otherwise, God will say to us, why did you only give this poor guy a dollar bill? He needs the money, give him $10, $20, but you answer, how do I know he's legitimate? I gave him something, but be happy on that level, we say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're worried about phonies or something we did. Now, Rav Menashe Klein goes further and he says, I've already discussed this tshuva, and he refers to the tshuva we did previously, but I don't want to leave you without anything new. And he says, I've come across a tshuva from Gedolei, and here there's a mistake in Rav Menashe Klein. In other words, And here we come to a topic that was a cause celebre in YU about 20 years ago. Gedolei Yisrael doesn't mean that they're necessarily great in Torah history. They can make mistakes. What happened in YU was, I used to say in class, it's Rabbi Shechter versus Rabbi Shechter. Remember what the Machlokes was about? Reb Heschel published that the Rav went to Berlin to run away from the Polish army. And if he would have been in the Polish army like 25 years, Rabbi Dr. J.J. Shachter had a whole article and in the Torah Mata Journal, I believe it was, and he criticized Rav Heschel that his history is all wrong. In other words, you're confusing, yes, the Cantonists, But the Cantonists were long before the Rav was supposed to go into the Polish army in the 1920s. You follow? Cantonist was abolished. He went into the Polish army 2 years, 3 years. The Stipler Rav. The Stipler was in the Polish army, World War I. They say he couldn't hear well from all the cannon shooting. It took away his hearing. So, all right, Peschel made a mistake. It's what I said 15 minutes ago, Natan. Not all of us know everything. And when the people ask me, if I don't know, I know who the expert is. I referred, someone asked me, a Shiloh from Cleveland. I referred him to my Talmud Rabbi Dr. Mark Licht in Brooklyn. He's the expert on that topic, which he is. So, all right, I'm proud to say I'm a historian. I have a doctorate. I've published. But that works to my discredit, because wherever I go, people say the great historian, the wonderful historian, the Amoritz, the Oraita. No one gives credit. All right. Part of life. We have to accept it. Now, the Reb Menashe Klein calls Reb Yehuda Mintz a contemporary of the Ramban, the Shulchan Aruch. And I'll explain to you his mistake. If you look into the published edition of the Shulchan Aruch, everything the Ramah says, in parentheses, there's sources for it, okay? You'll always see that the Mari Mintz, among others, is quoted quite often. Doesn't mean he's a contemporary. The Mari Mintz was a Talmud of the Maran Rottenberg. It goes back to the 1200s, 1300s in Germany. There was the Mintz family, there was the Mari Mintz and the Maran Mintz, and they... The Ramah, when he paskined, what he paskined, it's not the Ramah who did it. I don't know if we know for sure who put in the sources. But whatever the Ramah paskins, it's a Trumat Hadeshin, it's a Mari Mintz. The Ramah was greatly influenced by the end of the Rishonic period in Germany. And the Mari Mintz was a giant. Now, here is an edited edition, and here we can be very proud. We have it downstairs in the library. I want to recall the person who edited it. We shouldn't take for granted that beautiful scholarship just falls out of heaven. We have a lot of Sfarim of Rishonim. It could be that the Rishonim didn't have to be articulate with sources because everyone knew Shas by heart. No, our generation, we're far from knowing Shas by heart. So if you look into the Achronim, there's a whole gradation, step by step. It begins, they'll quote a Gemara, they'll quote a Perek. No, we need a Daf. Today we need a Daf and an Amud. I've said many times over 62 years of teaching, the day will come when you need a Daf, an Amud, and the line. The number of the line.
The art scroll, so, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Oh, so the subdivisions. You know who else does that? Rav Steinsaltz does that. With the Steinsaltz Talmud also. Aleph, Bet, Gimel. Okay. Now, one of the greatest challenges is to edit Rishonim. When you get an edited edition of a Rishon or an Achron, an early Achron, it's fabulous. It's put into context, it has footnotes, it gives sources, it gives cross-references. A number of brilliant doctorates were done at Bernard Rebel Graduate School. And by the way, today it's been done all over. You know what I've said, that the universities in Israel suffer in the Judaic world. They're willing to close everything down. It's a money loser. Could you imagine the state of Israel? Why? It's very simple. The Hez, the yeshiva, have turned out students that can do as good a job as someone who got a doctorate from Hebrew or Bar Ilan. So, you, for instance, you go into the library downstairs, there's an edited edition of the Maram Rottenberg. I think it was done at a lunch foot. You'll find other edited editions done in Shalavim, Kerem Biyavna. Mossad Rav Kook puts out fabulous Rishonim edited editions. I saw in Lakewood, when I visited Lakewood 2 years ago, they showed me around, and I there's students there. One student edited the Chaim Heller's letters. I looked at him, I said, did you go to Bernard Rebel Graduate School? I never saw such a beautiful job. Now, There was, in the Bronx, there was the East Bronx. The East Bronx, in the 30s into the 40s, still had a religious presence. It gathered around Reb Moshe Bick. I trust you know the name Reb Moshe Bick. Again, I knew him personally. He was his uncle was my wife's family's posek, her grandparents. Every Shiloh was his uncle. There were two Rabbi Bicks, his uncle and his brother. His uncle and the brother who was the father of Reb Moshe. Reb Moshe's father, it was in the Bronx, as I recall. Reb Moshe took over that rabbinate. And he told me that he taught NYU for a little while. I believe he was Rav Burak's assistant. Again, I'm telling you history, no one knows this anymore. Reb Aaron David Burak was a telzer, was a big Talmud Chacham, a big Mizrahi, had a tremendous speaker, a darshan. And he taught in Reitz, and he was rubbed in Williamsburg. He had a big shtela, and he couldn't come in early in the morning. He had to still be in Williamsburg. So he always had an assistant who took his shear for the first few hours. I think Reb Moshe Bick assisted him. I know he assisted someone. I think it was Reb Burak. He told me this. So I asked him, why didn't he remain in the yeshiva? He's a Talmud Mufakar of Reb Moshe Soloveitchik. I mean, he said to me, I think they thought I was too frum. You follow? Today he'd be a star in the yeshiva. That you look at the branch opening in South Florida, I couldn't believe these are all YU guys. They wouldn't let me in the door. Where's your beard? Where's your payas? Where's your black clothes? Your beckish? All right, you know, to learn a little bit, but that doesn't count here. It's a different world today. So, Reb Moshe Bick Shul, the end of the East Bronx was on Crotona Park. Crotona Park was a tremendous park. And that's where the real East Bronx ended. Right on Crotona Park was the most modern of the shuls in that area. Kehilat Israel, K-I. This was the shul where Rabbi Finkelstein, who later goes to the seminary and becomes the president and the chancellor, he was rabbi of Kehilat Israel. And he was, you know, he was totally frum. And Kehilat Israel was a shul, you know, with a mechitza, but a modern shul with a sermon, with English. Oh, and Bnei Akiva, it's in K.I. that I met my wife. Now, when Rabbi Finkelstein, Eliezer Finkelstein, Louis Finkelstein, he was the son, by the way, his father was a Yudapeish Rav in Brooklyn, and he learned in the seminary, did a doctorate, he was her scholar. And he later goes, and you know, the rest is history. He brought Professor Lieberman to the seminary, Professor Heschel to the seminary, and they used to say about, I said this in class when I spoke in great detail about the seminary, they used to say about Professor Finkelstein that he believed in God and worshipped Rabbi Lieberman, do you follow? He loved Rabbi Lieberman. And Lieberman and Heschel never got along because Heschel was totally Hasidic. He was the Kapishnitzer Rebbe's son, the Kapishnitzer Rebbe's brother. And Professor Lieberman was totally Litvish, more so than the Rav. The Rav was ruined by Yezias and Chaslavich, which was a Lubavitch town. So the Rav, you know the story that later in life, I was told this by ear witnesses, they're davening Mincha in the YU Beis Medrash, and the Rav is saying for Mincha, Sim Shalom. And they heard him say, Sim Shalom. So afterwards, the Talmid Manov Rebbe, you know, how does it come to you? Not Shalom Rav Mincha on a weekday? And the Rav says, well, what's the question? I grew up in Chaslavich, my formative years. So it's fascinating. Now, who succeeded Rabbi Finkelstein in Kehilat Israel? Rabbi Asher Ziv. Rabbi Asher Ziv was a Yerushalmi kid who arrived in America after World War I. And he already knew how to learn. He went to YU. He got smicha. He went to Bernard Rebergat. He did a doctorate. He did a doctorate that was second to none. No, what was his doctorate? It's downstairs. He edited the Ramah, Shelut Tshuvat HaRamah, whenever you quote the Ramah today, the Shaddik and Shuvot, it's the Mosav Rav Kook edition, edited by Rabbi Dr. Asher Zinn. And he later edited, here it is, Shelet Tshuvot Hagon Reb Yehuda Mintz. What an individual, what ability, what a beautiful job. And this was published by YU. What's interesting is, on the right on the page after the title, I Xeroxed this and I want to just read it. Baruch Hashem Chafkei Nisan Tash Sab, it's 20 years ago. Matana netuna lesifriyat machon grispi Yerushalayim bebracha hatzlacha belimud haTorah letamidei hamachon hamachabea asher zev. So, and I also want to put in a personal note. The last time I saw Asher Zev, very fascinating, a moment in time, I was up in Lebanon. It was the Lebanese War, 1982. I have a war ribbon from that war because I was across the border in the war zone. I mean, I had to carry a loaded gun and all that goes with it. And I got out for Shabbat. I was up there 2 weeks, and they had a change of guards and white family. You go home for Shabbat. So I get out on Friday, and I get a lift to Yerushalayim. There were cars going back, and I have to take a bus. And I'll never forget this. I'm on the bus and sitting there with my gun. And you know, when you travel with the gun, you have to remove the cartilage immediately from the gun. You have to keep it separate. And when I sat down, there was an elderly lady sitting next to me, and she got so frightened. And I tried to explain to her that the machsan, or the machsanit, I think it's called, is not in the gun. She didn't understand, and she looked around for another seat, and she literally walked away to be far away from the gun. At that moment, someone who was sitting in back got up and sat down next to me. It was Asher Ziv. And he saw that whole encounter, what I went through with Nebuch the gun that so frightened her. Now, what's amazing about this tshuva, there's a world in this tshuva. It's a study unto itself. It's Shelet Tshuvot Marimins Siman Zion, and published by Yeshiva University, and it's the edition of, edited by Asher Zev, Rabbi Dr. Asher Zev. Now, what's amazing about this tshuva, it's Zion, and how little the world has changed. If you would read this tshuva to me, I would say it's from my shul in Maplewood. It's from the 1900s, the 2000s. Nothing has changed. And here's the story, that they turned to the Marimins, that there were, in this community, they were building a shul. They were building a shul, and they ran out of money. And they turned to the Balabatim and made an appeal, but not just an appeal. They wanted to tax them. It's like, I can tell you I've sat in Dinei Torah. For instance, I'll give you an example out of Israel. This is a true story. The early 1970s, a girl is getting married, and it's a family that doesn't have means, and the Chatan's family is insisting that they share the cost of an apartment. And they didn't know what to do. So they sat down with the Beit Din, and they listed out all the relatives in accordance with aunts, uncles, cousins. And the Beit Din assessed every blood relative a certain amount. Obviously, aunts and uncles were assessed more than cousins. And it had the authority of a psak halacha. And this is what they did here. They try to go to the Balabatim and tell them, you owe $100, you owe $200, we have to cover the cost of the shul. And the Balavatam, some of them said, who needs this? Who needs such a fancy shoe? Why did you spend so much money? Who gave you the right? Natan, they looked at the little temple in Woodmere, the Young Israel. You can get lost in it, right or wrong. Ribbono shel Olam, who needs such a big shoe? What's going on here? No, nothing has changed. Ribbono shel Olam, nothing has changed. Then they wanted to build the new mikveh. Why did they want to build a new mikveh? I couldn't believe what I'm reading here. And here, let me give you a little history. Hi, the Rav once said in the public yahrzeit drush, the Rav was in his prime, the Rav had a good sense of humor, and this has to be in the 1950s, I heard him. It had to be in one of the yahrzeit drushes in the Agada. And the Rav said, no Yiddish, English. You want to know if a woman is a balabasta. So the Rav says, don't go into the living room. You're not going to judge by the living room. You're not going to judge by the living room. Living room. You want to know if she's a balabasta? Go into the lavatory and see how clean it is. The Rav said that. I know what he's saying. The living room. You entertain people. The dining room. I mean, if you're Hungarian, a big chandelier, wow. But the bathroom, that's where we see, clean or not clean. So I always said, you want to judge the spiritual tenacity of a community, go visit the mikveh. And when you see the mikveh, you'll know whether these people are with it or just, all right, good enough. 1961, I went into my first Lower Marian synagogue, suburb of Philadelphia. You know, your wife has to go to mikveh. There was one mikveh in Philadelphia, South Philly. It was a nightmare. You went to the mikveh, people were sitting outside and playing cards, not one white person there, all right, but it wasn't, they didn't harm you, but they would make stupid jokes about Jewish women, mikveh. You went out, you were shaking. Wow. Now you can understand why Philadelphia was entirely a conservative city. There was no Yiddishkeit whatsoever. Later they built the mikveh in Logan in 62. I remember I was at the dedication. And within a few years, it was Sakanat Nefesha to go to Logan. Today, Lower Marian Synagogue have a state-of-the-art mikveh. All right. So here, they want to build a mikveh. And he says that should be in a Jewish area, not among the Gentiles. B'makam tzanua, k'day litbol b'zmanova l'arzol l'beita im chashecha. And they want the women should be able to walk home at the early evening. It's not a bad neighborhood where they want to build the mikveh. And listen to this. L'chotz v'litbol b'metinut u'bilti eima v'yira v'pachad lo b'halicha v'lo b'chazara lo me'arelim. The long mikritzim. What a description, boy, and is this accurate. A woman goes to mikveh, she has to comb her hair, clean herself. You don't want her to rush. You want it to be done b'mitinut. They say in Yiddish, it's a fabulous expression, eilenit eini yoledet. Eilenit. So when a woman who's barren can't give birth, heilenit eini yoledet. When you rush, you accomplish nothing. You rush. How many times has Yomo rushed? And what did he accomplish? You understand? You have to walk, do, think, slowly. B'mitinut. Anyone who learned Misavik, did you ever learn with Reb Yisrael Salanta? This is one of the basic principles of Musa. Ah, Natan, could you believe it? There were people that said, who gets a halt? We just need a mikveh. Gnuga mikveh, what's the difference? Goyim is sitting outside. Jew. I've heard stories, by the way, again, it's sickening. I heard about the mountains. They know someone goes to mikveh, they make, from Jews, make lewd comments. This is the heart of tzniut. And people are complaining, who needs it? Wow. Then there are other people, he says, what do I need a mikveh for? My wife is past menopause. My wife is old. What do we need it for? Oh, wow. Then another question that comes his way, and this is in Yonad Yoma with what we're dealing with, it seems that whenever there were poor people, they have to be assigned to homes to eat. You have this thing, I can tell you in Yerushalayim, there's a Beit Knesset Yakar. Every Friday night, every Shabbos, people sign up that they're willing to entertain. And they will ask, does anyone need a place to eat? Could you imagine what we're talking about? And they'll tell you, go to this family. So here in this community in Germany, 800-900 years ago, there would be pitkaot, in English, petek, I can't think of English anymore, a note, a piece of paper, and you would have a name of a family. So the gabayim would take out the petek. One gabay comes along and says, no, let the poor man take out the petek. They want to embarrass him. And why are you a problem for the community? All right. No. So they also had this shaila. People said, no, don't embarrass the poor man. We've always had this custom, hachnasat orchin, and the marimin says, avo lo hotzat orchin. What you're trying to do is to get rid of the people who need hospitality. No, the balabatim take out the petek, don't embarrass the poor man. Tell them where to go to eat. And I don't have to tell you, this story repeats itself in modern times. Nu, can anyone tell what I'm referring to? Gessen Teg in the yeshiva in Europe. They used to assign the boys to families. Each day you ate at a different family. And sometimes you didn't eat, you got very little, depended on the family. This was one of the great evolutions in the yeshiva world, that we have dormitories. And you should know, Natan, you went to IU, you want to be proud? When the Maram Shapiro was building Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin, and hope, pray for the Rebbe's health, he should be able to give all the lectures he's prepared. You'll understand why that was a revolutionary idea, a Hasidic yeshiva that was not for just one type of Hasid, but for all of Poland, the top minds. So he went, visited America. One of the places he visited was YU, the new campus, to see how you build the dormitory, how you build the kitchen. This was revolutionary, that the boys don't have to be beggars and go around pleading for food. We have our own kitchen. And here, this is what he says, Hachnasat Achim. V'lo hotza'at harchim. Now, he quotes the Marie Mintz being from Germany, so he quotes the Maram Rutenberg, and he says, the Maram Rutenberg, he is the ultimate authority. We have to follow him, whatever he paskins. And he talks about Marami Rittenberg deals with this very question. How do you run a community? And here we come to, in graduate school, I mentioned Halavai Professor Avram Yitzchak Agus, Erwin Agus would be here today. Agus used to get out, he would make very sharp statements to attract attention. Because of his sharp statements, and at times he got into trouble. I don't want to go into details now, but Rav Heschel Shech, the Rip Kriya, the Rabbin one of his sharp statements. And Rakefer and Brunschwe, another brand, Rabbi Brunschwiegel, Rothkopf and Brunschwiegel, we heard the same statement 2 years earlier. We didn't rip Kriya. We walked out and said, ah, Zama Shugan, Azabi Kairis, he's so sharp. But Rav Heschel, he ripped Kriya. That's why he's Rav Heschel Schechter. And at least I amounted to nothing. Rabbi Brunschwiegel, all right, was top Rosh Yeshiva. But Rabbi Yehudah B'Sacha called his statements, he was not Bikiris, he was just a wild guy when he was teaching, he thought he could wake you up. So he, in graduate school, I had him in graduate school, he was a really wonderful teacher, and he said, the democracy, where did it begin? Not France, not America. Germany, Ashkenaz, the Rishonim, the Maram Mirotenberg, that was his specialty, he did his doctorate, and he claimed we had democracy. Now, here it is, the heart, is this democracy, what is democracy? And I'll paraphrase the Maram Mirotenberg. Every community has to decide how to run its affairs. Once they decide, they are the governing board. We have a concept of you, anyone who's learned Masechet Megillah, Zayin Tuvei Ha'ir. You can't have Hefkeret. I can tell you in Israel there's a concept of Avad Habayit. This is the very basic core of democracy. Hey, one house, my good friends were here, Rabbi Nachum Lamb's parents, Rabbi Avraham Lamb, Ani Lamb, and Chaya Lamb, Irene Lamb, wonderful people. So they were telling me, they visited someone that they're friendly with. In their house, the people fought so, there's no Varabayat. No one is responsible for cleaning, no one's responsible for ordering anything, fixing the lights, etc. No, that's Hefkera. You can't live like that. And the Maram says, the people decide, they have a vote, and they determine. And what they determine absolutely counts halacha l'maisa. Yiftach b'doro, and he quotes the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, yiftach b'doro, kishmul b'doro. Don't think it's going to come and say, well, I know when we were running this house, we had this individual, he was fabulous, we could depend upon him. Today, who is this new Schwanz that's in charge? No, he's in charge, you voted him. Yiftach b'doro kishmul b'doro. And it could be he's not as great, who learned, who grew in the job, but you can't leave it hefka. And the Maram Rutenberg says, whenever there's a machloiket, you put it to a vote. Now, who has the vote? This here already, it's not the democracy we know. Democracy develops gradually. Who has the vote? The Maram Rutenberg talks about it. You see it in other Rishonim, the Balabatim who pay taxes. In other words, Misha Yeshlo Meya, Yeshlo Deya. You're not going to say every last individual Tom, Dick, and Harry can vote. Well, this is a question. Today you have democracy. Everyone can vote. In the United States today, you know what's going on? The Democrats are trying to get in new immigrants, people who don't even know English. Forms are in Spanish. This couldn't go on 100 years ago. 100 years ago, you didn't know English. My grandfather lived in America for over 70 years. He never learned English, but boy, did he work hard to get his citizenship. And my father spoke to the judge, pleading for my grandfather to be naturalized. He barely knew there were 40. They asked him how many states are there. 48 states, Alaska. What did he know? Never. And my father said, look, he has children, Americans, we contribute. I work for the post office, I carry a gun. My father had some job, his first job in the post office, he had to carry a gun for protection, not to be robbed. And the judge, Baruch Hashem, was impressed, gave my grandfather citizenship. But today, the more you have, the votes. Originally, it didn't work that way. It's a long process. But yes, there is the democratic element that anyone who pays taxes, he has a vote. And once people have a vote, it doesn't matter what you say, it's 3 people, 7 people, 100 people, you must always follow the majority. And the Maharam Ruttenberg says they have the power when the majority decides something, they can coerce you, they can force you. You're obligated. It's like I told you that Beitin, that girl wants to get married, so they said, this uncle has a nice job, 5,000 lira. Another uncle is sitting and learning in a kollel for years, 1,000 lira. And it mamish obligated. I can't forget that they had to pay the money. It's enforceable by law. Here, it's exactly what the Maharam Meir-Rutenberg says. Now, I'll tell you what else is interesting. He starts describing what are the needs of a community. So you can find all the sources. It's a Tosefta, and all right, we all understand the needs of the community. You have to have a shul. You have to have a Beit Medrash. You have to own a Sefer Torah. That's the basic needs, but there were many more needs. And here, you compare it to modern life. One of the basic needs of the community, I'm quoting from the Tshuva, was a Beit Ofim. You had to have a bakery. Why was a bakery so important? See, it's something we could never conceive of today. Everyone had to bake their bread. And more than that, Shavuot on Shabbos, where did you keep it warm? Do you remember the stories or not? These were all in the bakery. And remember, everyone was kosher. Everyone had a cheskat kashrut. It's not today. You could never, ever be able to work this out. But a bakery, a Beit Ofim, all right? That has disappeared today. Today, you walk into the supermarket. Wow, the bread available, it's beyond comprehension. And you don't even appreciate it because when the Russian Aliyah came, when we were in Russia, all of Russia was black bread. By the way, in Russia there was always a problem that a lot of the bread was milchiks. Why? Because the Russian diet was very poor. And the government used to add vitamins and milk to bread to give them more sustenance. And halachically, you had to know which bread was parav if you wanted to eat it with meat. Not a simple matter. But in Israel, when the Russians came, the explosion of black bread available, pumpernickel today, go into a big supermarket, you have 10 different types of black bread, let alone everything else, maybe even more than 10. And a Beit Ofim. What else is needed? See this? Nothing has changed. Natan, have you met a girl yet? Not yet. Okay. Now let's say you meet a nice girl. Fine. Meet a nice girl and don't look for a finished product. You're not a finished product. She's not a finished product. Life together, you grow. All right? Want to get married? What do you need to get married? A hall. Isn't that the hall? Where are we going to get married? No one just wants to get married in City Hall. I mean, it's not the communist Russia. Baruch Hashem. Beit Chatunot. Every community in Germany had a Beit Chatunot. Fascinating. That too. And that too. On all these, kol in yanim, everything follows majority vote. And not only that, what about tzedakah, poor people? Whatever the community decides, you're going to give each one differently, more, less. How do you work it out? How do you honor them? How do you do it in a mechubadik fashion? everything counts. And here, believe it or not, we're talking about Germany. I saw this with my own eyes. You need a minion. You need a minion. My two nephews made good money living in Hillcrest. And Shabbos, they would be, I think it was a place in Long Island, where there had been a shul from time immemorial. Many people already moved away. And they had a problem with the minyan. The rabbi used to pay them to come to daven. Could you? Now, and this goes on until today. There were bad neighborhoods, all right? Baruch Hashem. I don't know in Israel. They could be. I don't know. Could be. There's some places where you can make a living just going to daven, or make part of a living at least. And here he has it. The Maram Mirutenberg. Why do you pay the people who need a minion, and you're willing to hire people to come and daven? How much do you pay them? Everything follows majority rule. Then he goes a step further. No. An Erev costs money. You have to put up poles, you have to put up wires, you have to make a sheet of mavoi. Ribbono shel Olam. And he says, someone's going to come and say, I don't need an Erev. I don't have to carry on Shabbos. I have no relatives I want to visit. Why do I have to be taxed for an Erev? Ella, all these matters, knife kaifen b'nei ha'ir zeh et zeh. The community has to have it. And you can't say, it's not for me. And this is the old story of the Gemara with someone planting trees. Remember, I believe it's a Gemara in Tainet. And here's an old man planting a tree. And someone comes along and says, hey, Rakefet, you're crazy. How old are you? What are you planting a tree? You're going to be around in 20 years, 30 years when this tree grows? And the answer is so perfect, so beautiful. I found trees when I was a kid. I want trees for the future generations. That's exactly here. Doesn't matter if you don't have a wife who can go to mikveh. You have to have a mikveh. This is part of a kehillah. Doesn't matter if you'll say, I don't have children who want to go to yeshiva, or need a yeshiva, or need a Talmud Torah, need a cheder. I don't have children. My children are out of the house. I didn't marry. I married, I couldn't have children. No, you're part of a community. Just like you need a shul and a Beit Medrash and a Sefer Torah, you need a mikveh, you need a school, you need an Erev. And by the way, you see from this tshuva that Erev were all over the place. It's not a modern invention. An Erev was part and parcel of a Jewish community. And that's why I remember when I did the Erev and I showed you the Rush, how the Rush screams and yells at a Talmud who found fault. What's an Erev? It's a legal fiction. Why do I need a legal fiction? One day maybe the microphone will work properly. We'll make a Shechiyanu. Hello? Hello? Okay, Yomo got it. Boy, you don't know. I need, for every Shia, I need a backup of 2, 3, 4 people. All right, Yomo, see what you can do. But let me continue. Why? An Erev is part of a community. And the Maram Mirutenberg is so sharp here. More than that, you learn how the Jews lived. And here I have to tell you, I heard the Rav on tape speaking in Moria, and the Rav says, "Can we have a shir?" It was something the week of Yom Kippur falling. And he's talking about when the next year will be. And so he says to the Balabatim, oh, You're busy. You're busy next week with Shia, with Erev Yom Kippur. You have to go to mikveh. And the Rav says, me gayanish. And Bris Kobin Nishke Gangan. We don't go. And Bris, they didn't go. And the audience is laughing. And you see here a conflict in values. The Hasidim, Erev Yom Kippur, Erev Rosh Hashanah. Who doesn't go to mikveh? And the Rav, I understand the Rav. Mikveh you go to when it has halachic significance. But stam to go to mikveh? No, it's nishva briska, we didn't go. Now that should be checked out. Did Rav Chaim Briska didn't go? Evidently, if the Rav said, it's on tape, you hear the Rav speaking. But here, he says to the men who claim their wives are post-menopause, what do I need? A mikveh. I'm widowed. Why do I need a mikveh? The Marami Rottenberg says, everyone goes to mikveh Erev Yom Kippur, including women. Wow. Now, that's something to think about. Women, again, it's off the... All right, let it be. I'll finish out this year. Don't kill yourself. But for tomorrow, let's go back to the old system. There's a short. There's something not working. Maybe if we had the microphone you want to get, there's money for it now. Everything is accomplished. They know that the money is in. There was a problem that the lady who took the money left Grist. She's working elsewhere now, working out of her house. And she forgot to tell Stephanie. But now they know. So tell Stephanie afterwards the file cabinet and to get the microphone and to get it right now, not to delete Dali. Okay. Anyway, amazing. Women go to mikveh Erev Yom Kippur, and he says that these women, lefi minhag hanashim hayekarot hakshayrot shafilu askeinot tovlat be'erev Rosh Hashanah ve'erev Yom Kippur, and they consider this tefillah is a siman letara utetshuva. They need the mikveh. Don't tell us that you don't need a mikveh because your wives are older. And he even says that some of the people considered this going to mikveh so important that they made a bracha. And there he says that kol haposkim pasku shehi bracha levatala, that the poskim were against making the bracha, that it's a bracha levatala. But what? And then he says something else, what you learn from this tshuva between the lines. And here I have to tell you, I'm very thankful to Bernard Rebbe Graduate School. I took courses in response to literature, and you learn so much how to read between the lines. He writes something else, that the men, where did they go to mikveh, Rosh Hashanah, and Kippur? They went to the river. They went down the river. He says, and sometimes the Erev Rosh Hashanah, Erev Yom Kippur, falls when it is a Gentile holiday. And when it's a Gentile holiday, they didn't allow you to go to the river. Whatever the reason was, I don't know. It had to do with their idol worship, with their religion. They didn't allow. They went, they baptized themselves. Jews weren't allowed. Einam Rishayim Litvol Min HaRat Bifnei HaRishayim. And you certainly need a mikveh if you can't go to the river. And you cannot have any complaints against the trustees. They're the ones who decide. They were voted in. And their decision obligates every member of the community. And you cannot complain, you cannot find fault with them, Yiftach bedoro kishmuel bedoro. And then he goes on, he's fabulous, he says, so some people leave it to the Jews, we have good heads. But the Gemara talks about Zion Tuvei Ha'ir. We only have Gimel. We have the Chveis 120, the Knesset. Zion Tuvei Ha'ir is not a halacha d'oraita. It's the way they functioned at that time. But whatever concept you develop, that obligates. And it can be 7, it can be 10, it can be 120. Knesset Yisrael. You know, and Knesset Yisrael was modeled on the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. And then the Maram continues, and with the guests that are coming, and the Maram says, hi, he quotes a fabulous, it's a Rashi, it's the Balei Musa all the time. Shmot Chav, Pasuk Chav Gimel, V'lo ta'ale b'malot al mizbachi asher lo tegale ervatcha olav. And this is a fabulous concept. Yomo, let me quote some dashanut that I've used over the last 70 years. Where's this pasuk written? Right at the end of Yitro, right before Mishpatim. Right now what we're reading. We had Matan Torah. And this is the first halacha, the first concept, that concept, the Matan Torah. If they would wake up Eliot in the middle of the night, what are we going to talk about after Matan Torah? Eliot would say something, Shabbos, marriage, Kedusha. And what do they talk about? Don't have steps, have a ramp. Why a ramp? So when you walk, you shouldn't expose your legs. Wow, what are you talking about? It's rocks, stone. Who are you embarrassing? And Rashi quotes the Medrash that something inanimate, you're worried about embarrassing them, embarrassing the stones. Allah had kama v'kama, not to embarrass a human being. And the Maram says, Alachat kama v'kama, not to embarrass poor people. They are not stones, they are human beings. Ach, and he goes further, that Tamar and Yehuda, Tamar is pregnant, Yehuda is furious, she's mizaneh, and she doesn't say, I'm pregnant from you. She's willing to be burned alive. She says, I'm pregnant to the person who owns this signet and this cane. And Ad kedei kach ha-mavayesh p'nei chaverim barabim ein lo chelik li'olam haba. And you want to embarrass the poor people? And Natan, I'll let you in on a secret if you have read Washington or haven't finished it yet. That's how I met my wife. I was a Madrich in Bnei Akiva, teaching already at the age of 17. And Malka was talking to one of her friends, and I called her to attention. I'm giving a lecture. And she shot back at me. That second I knew, this is the girl I'm going to marry. Baruch Hashem, it just took me a few years to work it out, but we worked it out. This is what he's quoting. I mean, this is fabulous, fabulous, that you see life. Humans are humans. We can fly to the moon today. We can have missile shooting. We have artificial intelligence. But the basic human being remains exactly the same. Oh boy, did I hear this. Who needs a yeshiva? I've known children who needs a Talmud Torah. Who needs a mikveh? Who needs a beit chatunot? Have no one to marry off. Who needs a beit of so expensive, the balabatim, what have you done? And this is what they're complaining about. And this is the Mari Mintz quoting the Maram Mirutenberg. And at the end of the tshuva, the Mari Mintz says, look, I'm writing al pi halacha. This is the basic understanding of these questions. But if you have a different minhag, get back to me. And he says, Rak sheyehe minhag al yedei vatikin. If you have minhag in the past that was established by recognized authorities, then you have to get back to me and we have to reevaluate. So you see, the Maram, the Marim Mintz, he's terrific tshuva, and so many subdivisions in it. Democracy. Do we have full democracy? Wealthy people pay taxes. Only they have the right? What about the masses? Where do you draw the line? Who runs the city? What does Zayin Tovei Ha'ir mean? And then you see, but a minhag of the past knocks out any contemporary thinking. But who has to establish that minhag? Vatikin. Who are Vatikin? Oh boy, would we see machloket among Jews. Who are Vatikin? Okay. Now, Vic, you think this is ancient history? The Mari Mintz, the Maram Mirutenberg, Reb Menashe Klein. I fainted. Recognize this publication? Recognize this publication? Chabad. Shichat HaShavua. It's been upgraded recently. You understand the paper's nicer. Say that's a few weeks old. All right. I always am curious to see these are the Alonim. What do the Alonim have to say? All right. Let me give you the exact source. Shichat HaShavua. Erev Shabbos Kodesh Pachat Truma. So it was a week ago. This was Tetzave. This is Truma. Go to page, let's see if there's a page here. Well, I have to figure it out. I think it's 1, 2, 3, 4, page 5. Go to page 5. You'll see, bottom column, halacha lemaisa. It answers questions. Harav Yosef Ginsburg, Rabbi Zari Omer, if I'm not mistaken, Omer's near Beersheba. And you won't believe your ears. It's exactly the question that the Mari Mintz got. It seems in this community, in a certain shchuna, they built a beautiful Beit Knesset. And there was another Beit Knesset in the community, but there are now many more frum people. The other Beit Knesset is not big enough to meet their needs. And they built the Beit Knesset, and they ran out of money. Sound familiar? They got one estimate, no, this is Maisim B'chol Yom. And the Balabatim, the people running the shul, the board of directors decided to tax every individual. And people started complaining, do they have that authority? I couldn't believe my eyes. Nothing changes. 800 years later, exactly the question that the Mari Mintz and the Maram Mirutenberg had. And you got to see the answer, that the trustees are the trustees. He doesn't cite the Mari Mintz, but it's exactly the same answer. You're part of a community. You have to have a shul. Having one shul was not enough. You need a second shul. And everyone has to contribute in accordance with what the Balabatim decide. So, you see, in this tshuva that we're dealing with, the Menashe Klein, the Mishnah Halachot, says, I'm giving you a special gift, and he quotes the Mari Mince in length. At the end of the tshuva, he says, look, he calls him Echad Mei Hasrafim, Megedolei Hamorim Bizman HaRamah VaShulchan Aruch, which it's a little bit earlier than the Shulchan Aruch, as I explained to you. The Shulchan Aruch, let me ask you a question. Was the Shulchan Aruch a Rishon or an Achron? Oh boy, Mark, that is a fascinating question. Halacha Lamaisa, Natan, no one ever took a vote who is a Rishon, who is an Achron. Matan will put it this way, that healthy, intuitive sense of Am Yisrael determined it. And that's how we know Rishon. In retrospect, we know. Could very well be that the Shulchan Aruch in the Beit Yosef is the last of the Rishonim. In the Shulchan Aruch, he's the first of the Achronim. The Ramah is certainly an Achron. And this was his mistake, that the Ramah constantly quotes the Mari Mince. But the Mari Mince was yet Megidole Achronei HaRishonim of Germany. And he says, this is what they paskin, and this has to be Halacha L'maisa. Now, we have to, in here, Reb Menashe Klein, as I've seen many times, he was down to earth, he was street smart, he was not stupid, he knew what goes on. He says, what are you going to check? You're going to embarrass, the rabbi's not home. Again, he repeats it, people are away, time is wasted, money is wasted, pictures, and you're going to check. Can you really check properly? He says, some people come around with letters, they're the poorest people alive. Baloney. Rabbi had a good heart, he wrote a letter. I've done that in my life, and believe me, I know I'm going to get makas in Olam Haba. But what can you do? You feel bad, person pleads, you know it's not entirely true. But all right. The Ramoyim, once again he quotes the Gemara, you would rather throw yourself into a kibshan eish, the Gemara we quoted last week, than embarrass a poor person. So he says, look, it could be there are fakers. Nevertheless, they come around, contribute with common sense. Sometimes you'll judge the person, oh, he's really in need. Sometimes you say, it smells, something is fishy here. You give less, but don't interfere with poor people and don't insist that they have to have credentials. And this is the second tshuva, Halacha L'maisa, Hachotein B'Lev V'Nefesh Menashe HaKatan. He always signs his tshuva Menashe HaKatan. All right. Do they follow him? I am afraid to say that life has its own rhythm. And the more, one time in Israel, they estimated the Haredim are 5% of the population. Then it became 10%. Today I think it's 17 or 18%. They predict that it will soon hit 20%. According to the statistics of the Chinuch, I can tell you, Yerushalayim, there are more kids in Chinuch Haredi, Atzma'i, etc., than in the Chinuch Mamlachti Dati. So that already tells you something. Haaretz already predicted by the year, I think they had 2035, the Haredim will be a majority in the country. And that's when they went crazy. Lieberman started yelling, screaming, shouting, and doing everything they can to force the Hasidim into the mainstream? All right, this is not an easy question. I don't minimize it. We can't go on having a country where 50% plus of the country or the males in the country will not be working. But more and more people go around collecting. And the diaspora had to take steps. I think what I described, what I know happened in London and happened in Toronto, I don't know about Chicago with the chits and
green card.
It's a very nice solution. It's dignified and it works to the betterment of the poor people, because when you know it's tax exempt, you're going to give more. And it could be that's an equitable solution, le kavod ule teferet. The greatest solution in the world is we should prosper here, Torah should thrive, people should be able to leave the ghetto, bekavod gadol and remain charedim ledvach Hashem, and the day should come that the diaspora will have to collect alms from us here in Israel. And to a certain degree, that day has already come, because I don't have to tell you with the computerization and the genius of the Israeli mind and so many charedim and charediyot today in computerization and in artificial intelligence, we're heading for the day that the poor Jew in the diaspora will have to bow humbly before the ability, the technology, the advancement of the State of Israel. And here I'll tell you a little story that came up at Kiddush on Shabbos. My grandson, who got married recently, so he and his wife came to visit us on Shabbos. Now, she works in high tech and this type, and has a degree and working, and she works in Hachotzvim. Hachotzvim, I just read a review in the Jerusalem Post, has the fanciest restaurants in Yerushalayim. On an international level, they would have 4 or 5 stars. They are all glut kosher. And in this review, in this past Friday's post, it says, if anyone thinks Haredim are poor, they are mistaken. I went to this restaurant, people were waiting online to get in. And prices were not cheap. This was not a steakia or a falafel place, and it was all Haredim. All right, I don't know. It's certainly a segment of the Haredi population. So my granddaughter-in-law is telling us that she works in this division, what she does, and explaining, and she says a lot of the high-tech people are Harediyot, women who are Harediyot. So now you have the conflict in culture. My granddaughter-in-law, a graduate of Ulpana, Givat Shmuel, Baruch Hashem, a religious Zionist young lady, and she's working with these Harediyot. They're very friendly, and they have to meet with my granddaughter-in-law. And she says, well, I can't meet with you today because I'm working out of the house, Dr. Phil's program. I'll be up a good part of the night. Well, either I'm a Haredi or an Amaretz Gamur, I didn't know what the heck she is talking about. No, not Khan. Dr. Phil mean anything to you in that way? See, Phil is not a Haredi. He knows I must be Haredi. I don't know. So she said, the Harediyah said to her, oh, I don't want to appear ignorant. This, she said to me, he's one of the big bosses, one of the big minds. What is Dr. Phil? What are you talking about? It turns out that they come up with new products. Dr. Phil has somewhat sort of TV program, and he sells products. He pushes it. They pay him. Well, then people start calling in. How much does it cost? How do we order it? And the problem is, it's American time. It's like I'm giving shiur now. It's 10:20 here. It's 3:20 in New York. It's 2:20 in Chicago. So my granddaughter-in-law has to work the computer to answer their questions and tell them how much it costs and how you order it. So my granddaughter all knew what to do. The Charedit certainly would understand all this. She just doesn't know who is Dr. Phil. Now, Tan, is he Jewish by any chance? Do we bring him to Shir here, or he won't fit in? What I don't know. What's his last name? No one is just born Dr. Phil. All right? You're not sure. Okay, Baruch Hashem. Let me end off one step further. Another question, Mein Yan Linyan Bel Toinyan. Next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, we move on, and I'm going to relive a moment in time in the mid-50s when I put my Norelkel shaver on the Rav's desk. You know the picture, I sat right where I sat. I put it there. Rebbe, can we use it? And I have to say, Rav Menashe Klein approaches it exactly as the Rav did some 70 years ago, or 65 years ago. Now, Chelek Tadzayin Siman Samach Tet. And here he gets an interesting question, the year 2000. It's from Avram Shlomo Dickman. And the name Dickman is interesting to me because in my time, and there was in Bnei Akiva, Dickman family, I believe they were in Chaim Berlin. I wonder if this isn't part of the family. I have to tell you here too, it's again, we come into the Haredi problem of all the titles. Someone wrote to me from the Haredi world, and he addresses me with Rashi Teva, Kavod, Tifato, Haramah, HaToranit. And my wife asked me, what does this mean? I told her, she laughed at me, boy. I had to put a hat over my face. Understand? And when Jerry Blau came back from Kerem Biavne, Rabbi Yosef Blau, so he once said to the Rav said, and the Rebbe said, who do you mean the Rav? And he says, Rebbe, I mean you. Why'd you say me? You understand? We didn't come from that world, third person. All right, but it's Derech Eretz for a Rebbe is not with fancy titles. It's taking the Rebbe's message to heart, continuing the Dor HaHemshech. The Chruvim were in the image of a boy and a girl. You understand? It's not important the Zakein Skena. We need the future generation. Oh boy. So he gets this question right away. He apologizes. He writes, I don't know who you are. I don't know if I'm using the proper titles for you. Oh, I'd be happy to get an answer without any titles. And he says to him, what's the question? You're davening in shul. And this is Borough Park. I davened there 20 summers. I davened there for 2 months. And you can barely daven. People come around. By the way, Russians mastered it too. You got Russians coming up from where they live in the other area of Queens, and they come to Brooklyn, or they live in Brooklyn, and they know Jews have good hearts. And every 2 minutes, someone is coming around. So what do you do? Do you have to give them? What do you do charity-wise? The person asking the question quotes, let me get the, quotes the Shulchan Aruch, Yoredeya, here, Yoredeya Siman Resh Mem Tet Sif Katan Dalet. And look into the Ramah, Va'asur Sif Katan Dalet. Okay, Resh Mem Tet Yoredeya Siv Katan Dalet, and he quote, and it's the Ramah Vasur LaHarzir HaAni HaShoel Rekam. If a poor person asks you for charity, you are not allowed to refuse. Now, I have to tell you, this is a big problem for me because I don't carry money anymore. I just carry a credit card, and it's. There's one guy that comes around at 530 million. We don't get too many people at that time. But there's one man who comes for years. He's friendly with everyone, and he sits there. He says, when I come into shul, I came in this morning to shul. It was 5 19:5-20, and he was sitting there saying to Hillel, he's there, and I feel bad. I don't have any loose money, and afilu ain't no, but you can't turn him down. Afilu ain't no tein lo rak grogeret achat. One, what's a grogeret? A ta'ina, am I right? Or is it a date? A fig or a date? Even one little grogeret, shenema al yashuv dach niklam. He's quoting the Lashon HaTor, you can't let the poor person feel you're neglecting him. All right, this is a powerful psak of the Ramah, and that's the question that he's turning to Reb Menashe Klein and asking this question. And Reb Menashe Klein says to him, look, he says, I want to ask your forgiveness, but I'm about to leave for Eretz Yisrael. I don't have time to go into detail, but I'll answer you very briefly. And we'll see next week, Ripman. There's a Gemara I'm going to quote. You'll see, very fascinating. And what Reb Menashe Klein answers him, but this is what the question, the person asking the question was asking, where do we fit in? How do we deal with this? This is the Ramah. How can it be? I mean, could you imagine you'd have to carry a stack of quarters with you in Brooklyn, give everyone there, they still give quarters, at least years ago, I don't know if today already. I'm sure in Woodmere it's a stack of dollar bills like the Lubavitcher Rebbe on Sunday morning. Now, and notice the Ramah is saying, the Reb Menashe Klein is saying he's going to Eretz Yisrael. I want to answer a question that I just overlooked, a very brief question. I think it was Jack Levenstein who asked me the question. Maybe it was Vic. Tell me, Vic, if it was you or not, but I think it was Jack. Reb Menashe Klein, where does he stand hashkafa-wise? We see from his tshuva that we're dealing with a person of Hasidic background, the Lamdan Mufak, a friend of Elie Wiesel, a man who knows English, someone with his feet on the ground, a branch in Borough Park, a branch in Ramat Yerushalayim, and the answer is very simple. Reb Menashe Klein stood with Agudat Yisrael, I would say 100%. The greatest proof, his daughter married it was the Gerer, at that time, the Gerer Rebbe's nephew, Phoebus Gerer Rebbe's son. He was killed. Remember I told you a bus crash in Lo Aleinu in Geula. But you see that the relationship between Reb Menashe Klein and the Gerer Rebbeim was very close and warm. And Ger represents Agudat Yisrael. Ger is synonymous with Agudat Yisrael. Today in Israel, Rav Shnach already, there was a break, so there are two Agudat Yisraels. There's the Litvish Agudat Yisrael and the Chassidish Agudat Yisrael. Hamodia, Ger, Chassidus. Reb Menashe Klein fit right in with that type of thought, of that type of outlook, that type of hashkafa. And there's no two ways about it. He was not a satma. He had respect for satma. He was not apolitical like the Lubavitcher Rebbe, although the Rebbe, I always say the Rebbe made one mistake. I think it was in 1992, if the year is I have correct, when he got involved in Israeli politics, if you recall. Agudah ran a separate ticket against Degel HaTorah, and the Rebbe supported the Hasidic Agudah. And boy, when you get involved in Israeli politics, you fall flat in your face. But all right, that's a different story. But that's Reb Menashe Klein. Okay, to reiterate, first of all, are there any questions from the erudite audience sitting in front of me? Mark, your friend never showed unless he's invisible. Tomorrow or next week, I think there'll be more guests there. Baruch Ator Melech Olam Shekoni Yevid Varo. Are there any questions from the erudite audience in front of me? Okay, what did we do today? So we finished out that question, but what's fascinating is we dug into the Mari Mintz, the Maram Mirottenberg, and at the end of that shuva, I showed you the Sichat HaShavua Chabad. Nothing changes. It's amazing. Mamish, exactly the question that the Mari Mintz had. And Ein Hachinami, we can't embarrass a poor man. Kihilat have the right to make their own decisions. Vatikin Minhag, more important than anything, but nevertheless, life moves on, situations change, and the Tuvei HaKal, Shiva Tuvei HaIr, they have that right. That's why Agudat Yisrael looks up to Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah. That would be their Shiva Tuvei HaIr. And all right, it's just a shame today you have the Shatz Moetzet, the Litvish Moetzet, and the Hasidic Moetzet. In the Mizrahi world, there's a lot of tension because 50 years ago, if you were an Agudist, you followed Das Torah. If you were a Mizrahist, you had every right to think on your own and make your own decisions. Today, the world is much more learned and much bigger. Torah is much bigger in numbers, numerically. And the Mizrahi world today is also split, plain and simple. There's the one level is the Chadalim, Charedim, Datiim, Lumim. If you read the Alonim, it's in, you read B'Sheva, it's, and they, you know, to a certain degree, there's Das Torah there, according to whom they follow. And then you have the middle element, which they call the more traditional Mizrahi element. I belong to these two. I'm part Chadal and part the Mizrahi traditional. And then you have on the other end Torah V'Avoda. Torah V'Avoda already, that's that already is caught up already. We have a right to decide. It's a different world. The rabbis don't know everything. Well, the old-fashioned rabbis don't know everything. And this is Matzohar is involved, Beit Hillel is involved, Sar Kahana, the rebellion against the Aguda Rabbanim, the Haredim. All right, I'm somewhere in the middle. I have love. I have a lot to say about my own thinking, but it's not for now. Maybe Yomo, you're not in the war yet. Ukrainian army hasn't called you up. Just keep awake. When they interview me from Mizrahi for the publication, we'll see tomorrow. If he comes, we'll make a time. But we'll record it and put it up in YU Torah, because maybe I'll say more. All right, tomorrow morning I wouldn't miss for anything in the world. We walk the streets of Williamsburg. You better bring your walking shoes, Vic. We're mamish walking the streets until we meet again in health and happiness. Das Vedanya. All right, open it up to the world. Mark, thank you. Mark, how come they don't see you? How come they only see me? Aren't you sitting right? Oh, you're okay. Blocking yourself. No, you don't want. I want them to know. David is waving to me. Okay, David Vogel. London is on screen. New York is on screen. Oh boy, we're all here. David Vogel, you should know that I published a letter against Rabbi Riskin. I've gotten hundreds of comments. 99 in favor. One against. The one against is a guy who originally is from London. He's a great, great, great grandson of the Nodab Yehuda, and he's against. So she said to him, but they've instituted Mechitza at the Kotel. He said, no, that's in the Kodesh Kadashim. David, you better take him. You know him. You better sit down and learn with him. You should know that Jews did, only the Kohen HaGadol got into the Kodesh Kadashim and Yom Kippur. You didn't need a Mechitza then. But wow, he had the Mechitza in the Kodesh Kadashim. But outside of that, Baruch Hashem, but I feel very strongly, and if the Reform Conservative, they're carrying on, they want recognition that you have a choice, pluralism. There is no such thing as pluralism.
Not today?
Excuse me? Oh, Yitz is talking on the phone. There's no such thing as pluralism. There's Naseh v'nishma. Okay, and we have to be...
What about today?
Can you cancel him out? Can you mute him? Oh, can you just mute him?
I'm not sure.
You're not sure. Okay, are there any questions? No questions?
I was just going to mention about the story about his grandfather.
Can you mute out the Rabbi Reuben? Can you mute out Rabbi Reuben? Just Rabbi Reuben.
The weather is going to be tomorrow.
Nice.
Okay. Nice. Yeah. Rabbi Twesky, tell the Rebbe.
You mentioned the story about your father's process of getting his citizenship paper. We have a story in my family that my father's aunt, the Tom Rebbe's sister, who spoke English, but she wasn't that assimilated. So she came before the judge, and he asked her when her birthday was. So she said, "Well, Your Honor, sometimes it comes out in August, and sometimes it comes out in September."
The stories are legendary. Can I inherit? But thank God, David, we met far from here. Thank God we're here. That's all I can say. I see my great grandchildren, and I only hope they'll appreciate the decisions that their great grandparents made. You follow? That's they should know the previous generation, know to go further, and know to build in dignity. And I have an upsharing of a great-grandson. It's in Haifa. It's beyond my ability on Erev Shabbos to get there and rush back. But the Kanayin Hara, I want to sponsor the collation that they should know Malk and I are there, B'lev V'nefesh. And boy, an upsharing. Did I ever have an upsharing? Did my brother ever happen? Did my brothers have upsharing? Who heard of an upsharing?
The Hasidim went out.
Kanayin Hara. And these, it's not that their parents or their grandparents are chassidim. Lahefech, their one grandfather is a real litvak, 100%. The other are Hungarians, but the upsharing. But Kanayin Hara, they should only be like their parents. My grandson and his wife, ugh, what children. I don't want to say an extra word. Let's leave it at that. But that's the grandson who's helping the Israeli armament industry. So you understand what I'm talking about. He has to be a big London. He's a Talmud of Betel. He learned many years. Then he did Hezda Haredi. Oh, wow. Kanayin Hara. Okay. Are there any other questions? I want to thank everyone for honoring me with their presence. You have no idea how inspiring it is to see so many faces, both in front and on the screen. I wouldn't miss tomorrow's shiur for all the bullets that are going to be fired later today in Russia, the Ukraine. Hard to believe how time moves on and man doesn't change. Could you imagine Russia called up hundreds of thousands of troops? It's like Germany and Poland in 1939. They can march into Ukraine from two sides, the Russian side and the white Russian side. They'll be in Kiev within minutes. If it takes more than a few hours, I'll be amazed. It's shocking and frightening. And we have all our shlichim there. They're pulling them out today, all the boys and girls that are teaching Torah, the shluchim, and they say there's some, if I heard correctly, 10,000 Israelis doing business there, you know, people who are half Ukraine, half Israeli, and it's the Dor HaBeinayim, and they go back and forth like the Americans in Beit Shemesh who work in America with the computer, and they go back and forth, and boy, I hope they're not caught in the middle. Anyway, let's hope there'll be better news tomorrow until we meet again in health and happiness. Das Vidanya. Thank you, Mark, and thank you, Yomo, for making all this possible.